Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast, brought to you by Cyence Technologies. We interview outbound leaders at fast growth businesses to learn their secrets and bring you actionable insights. Thanks for joining us this week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Enterprise Sales Development. I'm Eric Quantz from the CMO at Cyence.
And I'm Caroline Maloney, the Director of Sales Training and Enablement at Cyence.
Super pumped. We've got Eric Noslowski today. And boy, oh boy, not only is Eric the founder of Growth Engine X, advisor to Gated, a brand ambassador for Hypecycle, a member of Rev Genius, and a VP of Growth at 10X Incubator, but this guy's run a ton of campaigns, and we got nothing but great campaign advice and some really cool tips and tricks, didn't we?
Yeah, I honestly think that this is probably the deepest dive into LinkedIn that we've ever done on this podcast. And LinkedIn through a few different lenses. A lot of times when we talk to our guests, it's about your personal brand on LinkedIn or, you know, how to bolster your profile. But he gives away some insane tricks about scraping info on LinkedIn and leveraging data tools. You'll have to listen, but some really specific, tangible stuff.
Yeah, I really liked it. And you're going to have to listen for some fun inside kind of like humorous events, such as learning what the boomer method even is.
Yes.
This is just a fun episode and it goes really quick. So without further ado, let's just get right to it.
Let's do it.
Well, one of the things that I kind of wanted to start the discussion around is it seems like you've had a lot of really interesting and diverse experiences at leveraging outbound go-to-market, mainly at the startup level, but please correct me if that's not exactly correct, but essentially bringing outbound programs to life for your clients.
Yeah, 100%. And startup is exactly where I started. I'll still do some startup stuff here and there, but now I work with a lot bigger companies. But yes, where I got all of this experience was actually, I was a lobbyist for the largest chamber of commerce in New Jersey. And so I had two sides where I was lobbying for healthcare reform, energy reform, and education reform. And then also, in order to keep that job, I had to sell. And that was, I never wanted to be a salesperson. I never like thought that I was going to be a salesperson. And so then I was like, all right, you know, like I can learn how to sell. And I had the great opportunity of being at the Chamber of Commerce. Everyone wants to train you for free because you're kind of this center of influence that if the training works for you, then you'll suggest it to everybody else. So I was trained by Dale Carnegie, Jeb Blunt, Sandler Training, a little lesser known ones as well. And I was just like, wow, there's a ton to learn about sales. It's absolutely nuts. But the biggest thing for me was one day I was at the gym and somebody told me, I just had told them, like, I was sitting there, I was copying and pasting all of these emails and trying to send them through Outlook. And so then they said, you know, what you could do is you could just put all of the first names in Excel, put all of the email addresses in Excel, and then mail merge it through Word and Outlook and then get them all out there. And I was like, all right, I'll try that. And so I had like a list of 200 people that all, they all wanted to hear from me. They all said like, hey, Eric, I want to set up a meeting with you. Like, so I always have to tell that part of the story because then people, when they hear the outcome, they're like, what? So then I did that. I got like 70 meetings booked off of that email. And so in my head, I was like, this is awesome. Like I need to like this sales technology stuff is, and that was just not even like sales technology. That was just like stupid stuff that you should learn in like a high school computer programming class. And so then that really started my push into all of the sales technology. So then I joined a incubator that we launched the incubator for startup companies. And then we actually were able to partner with Grant Cardone and we pitched him and we were in his ecosystem for a little while. And that was my first foray into startups. And I was just sucking up as much information as I could about it. And I read somewhere that when Silicon Valley startups raise money, they raise for maybe 40% of it to be for the product and then the rest for go-to-market. And I was just thinking, oh my gosh, if we're going to make our numbers work, we're going to have to somehow turn one salesperson into 10. Like we're going to have to stretch our dollar as much as we possibly can. And so that pressure forced me to just learn as much as I possibly could about the all kinds of sales and marketing automation. But then what it also did is since I was running so many campaigns in tandem with each other, from zero, like starting, getting the CRM started, getting the data together, identifying the ideal customer profile, then learning you shouldn't just do one, you should do three, like all at the same time in tandem, doing all that testing. Instead of doing that for one company at one time and learning that, I was doing it for like 30 at a time. And so that's how I was able to just like build from zero every single time and then say like, wow, okay, I'm never doing it that way again. That was a really big mistake. Or this was kind of a mistake. We'll just tweak it a little bit, or that just knocked it out of the park, you know? And so yes, definitely cut my teeth in startups. And it was the amount of repetition that I was able to have, but also just my love for the technology. There's some like creepy stuff that you can do that is just like so much fun. It honestly feels like I'm playing a video game, and like the dopamine hits that I get are like lists the size of like 20,000 people. And we're about to outbound to all of them.
It is not a surprise in the least to me that you're also associated with Hype Cycle and former podcast guest, Justin Michael.
Yeah, he was actually, when he was on, that was the first podcast I heard from Science. And actually, he even regards that podcast as one of the best he's ever done too.
Yeah, it's a definite must listen. And Justin's the exact same way and has even said the exact same thing. Like when I'm in the groove, his words, not mine, he feels like he's playing a video game with Outbound, like orchestrating all of his systems, all of his messaging, bringing it all together with some really inventive methodologies and ideas, all the rest. There's so many different directions I can go, but I really, since you've just name dropped a few, I got to ask you, out of all the things you study and had access to, the Dale Carnegie courses, the Jeb Blunt, you know, for my money, best book on prospecting, fanatical prospecting, anyone listening.
I definitely agree. Yep.
Even Grant Cardone, what was your favorite and what was your biggest takeaway? And if you could start anyone else similar to you, what would you kind of advise them?
Yeah. So I've never been asked that before. I have, my heart definitely goes out to the Dale Carnegie style of training. One, that was also the first audiobook I ever listened to was How to Win Friends and Influence People. My former boss, Jim Coyle, he said like, if you're going to work here, you have to listen to this book. And to be honest, I think I was the only employee who ever actually listened to it, but that's fine. Their training, I think their training is so good to teach you how to go from like working at Target to being a very effective salesperson. And nothing against people who work at Target, but just I'm talking about like having no transferable skills and then go to working in a sales job and really just knock it out of the park. So I really like the Dale Carnegie one for that reason. I have to agree, Jeb Blunt's book, Fanatical Prospecting, is absolutely fantastic. That book actually completely changed the way that I thought about all of this stuff. And I even started doing power hours, which I wish I invested in a dialer because I was doing it by hand. But I would do power hours and they're like, wow, you're calling a lot of people. And I'm like, yep, well, it's bringing people to events. If it works, let's just keep doing it. And so then with, say, like, Grant Cardone's training is very, very focused on closing. And like, and they will tell you, they do not care. Like some people will be in their training and I watched it. Some people will be in their training and they'll say like, oh, but I don't want to be too pushy. And then the sales trainer who's doing that, they call him Big Brother Dave. He's a great guy. He was like, well, do you want to be successful or do you want to be annoying? And I was like, wow, okay. Like they would also use some closes that I was like, whoa, that was like, I didn't even think that a salesperson, because they would literally, I would hear them on calls and they would just say, look, are we doing this or not? And I was just like, wow, okay. So they are very like direct and like, let's just close the deal, like, and just get it done. So then that way they churn through a lot more prospects, but then they also find that success a lot faster too. But you know, to each their own style. But yeah, so I would have to say between the Dale Carnegie and the Grant Cardone.
Awesome. And I want to pivot to Growth Engine X. So, you know, the slogan, it seems, would be, you know, how do you create inbound using outbound? Is that right? Am I getting those?
Yeah, 100%.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I've heard you talk about different strategies here, the Trojan horse strategy, community building, challenges. I'd love to hear you dive deep into community building, what that means to you, how individuals can start, and how companies can build communities too.
Yeah, so this was actually a huge outgrowth out of Hype Cycle, what we were talking about. And like, I have to call out Justin Michael. Tech Powered Sales changed my life, literally, because he just like opened up the things that I didn't even know was possible. And then Once you know something's possible, you could go way down into the rabbit hole. And that's exactly what I did. And so with Growth Engine X is, to be honest, it's kind of a joke. Like, I don't even have a website. It's just really an LLC that's tied to Stripe so that I could charge customers. Like, it's like not even, there's nothing else. Like, there's so many people who even come to me for marketing advice off of TikTok. And they're like, oh, what should my website look like? And I'm like, I don't know. We're clearing like, well, no, I'll just say it. Like, by myself, we're clearing like over 30K MRR. And I don't have a website. And I haven't even done any marketing. This is just like me coming out of the incubator trying to figure out what my next step is. And I'm just like, yeah, I'll do this stuff for you. So anyway, so what I found out at working at the incubator, and especially since this also really helped out, is because I was in the incubator, the industry profile that I put on my profile, on my LinkedIn profile, was venture capital and private equity. Which then, if you are in that industry, the LinkedIn filters just like put you into a whole new level of like getting bombed by cold emailers. And I would see just over and over again, everybody booking for time. Like, I don't know who you are at all. And everybody going for time, everybody going for, let's like book a time on your calendar or take a look at our web, you know, all this other stuff. And so it really was born out of a lot of what Dale Carnegie talks about in their courses of how can I lead with a ton of value up front and just get the conversation started. And then we could take it from wherever we go from there, right? And so I tried all kinds of things. So this Trojan horse kind of idea is like, let's build something super, super valuable and get it in front of people. And whatever kind of conversion we want to have happen, let's have it happen through the Trojan horse. So
you want to give a few examples of Trojan horses?
I was just going to go there. So two awesome examples. One was in person and one was done through cold email. So I wrote a book called Sales Nav Secrets. Well, an ebook. I don't want to like overperform. It's really just a lead magnet. And I build it as, in this ebook, I'm going to teach you how to steal your competitors' customers with first level connections, how to use LinkedIn events to get 1,000 people at your event, and three, how to beat the connection limits on LinkedIn. And instead of connecting with 100 people per week, I'll teach you how to connect with 1,000 people per week. Ran that campaign. We had a 15% positive reply rate on that campaign with no personalization other than first name, which I actually usually never do. I love making these, and maybe this is where we should go next, these messages of like super, super relevant research and then AI-based personalization where I'm like, I love calling out like a restaurant that's located in your area and then giving and saying like, oh, have you ever checked it out? Just things that like when you read the email, you're like, they actually looked me up, but I didn't. I just scraped all that data. And so that would be one example of a Trojan horse of just like leading with all this value. And it's very upfront in the beginning. It's all about like, hey, this is free because I just want you to join my community. This is all I want you to do. And we could go into the community one after this. The other Trojan horse I do all the time is, so when I go to events, I actually don't think it's worth it to go to an event unless you're speaking. Until I came up with this other strategy. A big part of my business is obviously building lists for people. Mm-hmm. And because the email deliverability is where it is today, I could give you a list of 10,000 people and you won't inbox more than 500 of them, like guaranteed. Like, you're just not going to make it unless you know what you're doing. And if you know what you're doing, you realize how much value I just gave you. So we're like still on the same line. And so what I did, I just went to Bitcoin Conference 2022 and I never went to a single educational thing. I just went to every single vendor and just was like, who's your customer? Who are you guys, you know, after? Like, I just get them talking about all of that. And then I had this list of investors, projects, YouTube influencers, social media influencers, all kinds of things with their contact information all in there. And if they said, you know, we're growing through influencer marketing, I would say like, oh, hey, by the way, I've got this list. Let me text it to you. Or if they said, hey, yeah, we're actually looking for investment. Great. I've got this list. Let me text it to you. But then even better than that, what I did was I cut the whole list in half so that a week or 2 weeks later, or any time I needed to pull on that lever, I could just say, oh, hey, by the way, I know we haven't booked our meeting yet, but I just updated the list and you'll see that it just doubled or it just increased. And so then I also had an immediate way to follow up with everybody as well. Then after the conference, I scraped everybody, all of the vendors who attended, because they all want their limelight on the site, which is great for me because then I just take down their information and I just enrich all of it. And then I went to all the vendors again and I said, hey, by the way, I don't think they gave you guys this list, but here's the list of everybody else who was there. You know, just let me know if you want to reach out to them. So I had these like 3 points of interaction. One, to be able to capture their mobile phone number, because I truly believe if you could consensually reach out to every person over their mobile phone number, you'd be able to just print money for the rest of your life. Like it's just the best channel, but it's the toughest channel, and it's really tough to even go. But that's why when I do communities, I start WhatsApp groups, because it feels the closest to texting and I get their mobile phone number. And then now we had the follow-up, and then we also had like, oh, by the way, like not only did I have this list in my pocket this whole time, I could do this stuff live, and I just did it for the event we were just at. And you know, here's the list. I'll just give it to you, you know. And so those are. So when I say a Trojan horse, like we're talking about just like just a huge value add that we're just putting in front of them. That somebody's like, wow, I don't even know how he came up with all of this stuff, and he's just giving it to me. Which people at the conference would even tell me, they're like, well, I would tell them I have this list of investors, and they're like, how much are you selling it for? I'm like, oh, no, I'm just giving it away. And they're like, oh, because people are selling lists. And I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah, there's like 6 people walking around just trying to sell lists. I was like, oh, I didn't even know that other people would do that. So yeah, just giving it away for free and just having those conversations. So both of those, you know, examples of what I call Trojan horses.
That makes complete sense to me, because ultimately you figured out what might be valuable to the people that you're talking to, you know?
Yeah.
For them to desire to maybe even fear missing out on something that you're giving away, but that once they get it, now they're in complete debt, reciprocity to you.
Yeah, exactly. And I also stress that like, this doesn't work for every business. Like if you're selling medical equipment and then you walk up to somebody with a whole list of leads, like that jump is a little weird, right? But it so happens in my business, like this just works, right? Like that a lot of people don't know how to make these lists, or they just don't care. And I can make lists incredibly fast, and I just, you know, ship them to people.
It's fascinating. Can you speak to like building trust effectively and quickly with those messages, whether it's a follow-up note or cold outreach? Like, what are some of your ideas on trust building in those initial interactions?
Yeah. And so are you talking about like at an event or cold?
You know, honestly, both. I'd be really interested
to talk on both. So at an event, I have a whole process. One of my biggest mentors, Mike Koenigs, wrote a book. When I send this podcast to him, which I will, I forget the name of his book, but Mike Koenigs, he runs a business called You Everywhere Now. And it's called Money Phone, duh, because he turned it into a verb. And so he teaches everybody about like, you can uncover thousands, tens of thousands, maybe one of his customers, I think he has a case study that they did like $1 million of business just from what's on your mobile phone today. And so he has this whole process that he teaches when he goes to events of, all right, you meet somebody. When you meet them, you'll say, all right, let's trade information. And then they might go for their email, or they'll say like, do you have a card? And I never carry cards with me, because I say, no, I'll just text you. And so then I just text them, and then now you have their mobile phone number. Then I take a picture with the two of us so that we remember. And then there's these things on your phone, which actually, one of my TikToks for this actually got featured in the New York Post, which I thought was crazy. On your phone, it's a super simple thing. They're called keyboard shortcuts. And you can type in whatever you want and then press space, and whatever you want to fill in will just happen. So I have, and I put an X in front of all of them so I can remember. So then I meet the person, I take the picture with them, then I put in X intro, and then that just says, hey, this is Eric Noslaski from Growth Engine X. Great to meet you. If I know their name, I'll replace the you with their name. Otherwise, I'll just ask them over text, or I'll use OSINT tech to figure out their name from their phone number, but that's where it gets a little creepy. And so then that's the first level of trust. If I had a really good conversation with them, I'll take a video with them too. And I'll say, hey, you know, John, let's just take a quick video so we both remember exactly what this was about, because events could be kind of crazy. And we'll say like, hey, John, we were just talking about the marketing that you're doing at your company, and you guys really wanted to try outbound, but you keep landing in spam. Is that right? Yes. Okay, so then how did I say that I could fix your problem? And then they'll say whatever I just told them back, like, we're going to set you up on a dedicated SMTP, and we're also going to do inbox rotation, which I don't think anyone remember that if I do tell them that. But anyway, then now I just got them on video saying how I could solve their problem, right? So now I also have this like awesome video that now, oh, you know, in the video that we took, you said that I could help you with this problem. Let's get on a call. So in person, it's way, way faster to build that kind of trust. And I have a full process for doing that, which includes the picture and then the video and then the follow-up that comes behind it. But usually when you meet in person, the trust is there a lot faster. But when it comes in cold, I am working on this new theory that I am very close to being like 100%, like I'm going to put my flag down and put my stake in it. I think that there's a lot of great literature around when you're cold calling, your tone needs to be extremely confident and you need to be not necessarily assertive, but you need to show up with some confidence. If you stutter, you're almost out, right? I've found that I get far better reply rates on cold email when you do just the opposite. Instead of coming in and saying, hey, I noticed that you raised a Series C, we help all of these companies, we could definitely help you, we've got this, spend your money with me, I know you raised it, let's go. Instead of coming in with that kind of confidence, coming in with, you know, and like I said, that kind of like sandwich messaging of super relevant API scraping that we're doing and then the AI at the bottom, but coming in and just saying like, hey, totally not sure. I noticed that you guys get 50,000 website visitors a month. That backlink from Men's Health must have been really tough for you guys to get. Congratulations on it. Hey, but I noticed that you get nothing from your Instagram page. Am I wrong here? Or is that actually true? Because we just helped a company that was in a similar situation like you actually compete with their SEO backlink traffic from their Instagram traffic. Is this at all something that you guys would be talk about, or one of my favorite calls to action right now is from Alex Horbosi. You know, would you be totally opposed to talking more about this? Or, you know, basically putting the call to action in a way that like the answer that you want is no. So would you be totally opposed to moving forward on this? No. Okay. That's more of the calls to action that I've been using lately. And like I said, I'm coming really close to just coming out and saying like, having kind of like this 50% sureness, but then like stuffing it full of data is such a great way to build trust, because you're not just coming in there swinging and just, you know, they are like, oh, who is this person just coming into my inbox? You're coming and just be like, hey, you know, I might be a little lost here. I'm a little, you know, and it just feels way more conversational. And so right off of a cold email, I think that's one of the best ways to build trust. Absolutely.
You know, it's so funny you should say that, because one of the things that I can tell you with absolute authority, first person knowledge, as someone that's been a CMO for now, I guess 5 roles in a row, and you know, has typically held very large budgets and gets pinged on the regular to the tune of like, you know, tens of thousands of cold emails a year. The assumptive me, all about the sender never works. It just never works. Yeah. Like, literally, my own pattern match is delete, 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 delete. Oh, wait a minute. There's someone that's actually triggering either a help instinct, triggering kind of like an interesting curiosity or a thought. Somebody who's non-assumptive, right? Because they're a stranger and they don't know me. Like, but asking those questions or just giving me that, you use the word lack or not confident or unconfident, I would almost give it uncertain, because you don't know what's going on inside of a company that you don't work at. It's such a better approach, like orders of magnitude better of an approach.
Yeah. And even if you can't cram all of the data that I can cram into an email, well, and if you don't learn, well, and not even learn, you had to have heard this from somebody else. And if you haven't, you need to get into better circles. If you write an email over 4 sentences, you're out. Like, I can't believe people are still doing that. Like, legitimately, I just cannot believe.
Well, I don't want to do your work for you.
The funniest thing is when you open like a LinkedIn request or one of those like notes on LinkedIn, and you can't tell who this person is, what they're trying to reach out to you about or anything like that in the mobile version, I have to swipe like 3 or 4 times to even understand what
I don't even read it. I don't even read it. And then, so I don't read that. And then another one that I hate, I don't know what you guys feel about this, because I think this is like a heavily contested thing. I think breakup messages are some of the dumbest things ever. I don't know about you guys, because I know some people claim to have data that the reply rate increases on the breakup email, but the whole philosophy makes no sense to me. Like, oh, hey, you've ignored me this whole time. And so now I think if I tell you I'm never going to contact you again, you're going to respond. And I just don't know. And then now you really can never respond to them. Because there are some people who write, and to their credit, it works. Like Justin Michael will do like 7 email long sequences, but he's got a full flow with like LinkedIn messages going into it and calling and like all this other stuff to get people's attention. But we'll just do three. And we can build such big lists that if you don't respond on three, I'm going to circle back in 2 months. But like my list is so long, I'll just keep going on and just recycling to the next one. Unless we're talking about like cracking Fortune 1000 companies, then of course the game completely changes. But if we're talking about the SMB market, like three emails, and then I'm just going to circle back to you when we rerun the campaign, you know.
What I would say to you about the breakup email is I actually think of, especially on the email channel alone, the intrinsic value of each and every message, right? So ultimately, I don't remember who emailed me yesterday, let alone like 3 months ago or 3 weeks ago or 3 days ago. So the bigger point is like, can you use any message or framework or methodology to like open up a conversation right then and there? So I definitely hear like the people that say, hey, a breakup email works because it's an attention getter. It breaks some patterns for some people. Mm-hmm. And on that regard, it can be more successful. Now, if it's just a kind of a canned, seen it before, been there, done that type of breakup email, then yeah, it's absolutely going to fall flat because the intrinsic value is extraordinarily low. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah. 100%.
It also evokes shame. Like a lot of those breakup emails, that they bring you into that shame spiral that you really don't want to send your prospect on. It's Eric, what is it? The parent sub-ego that Beck Holland talks about. You know, it's the reprimanding, like, you didn't reply to my emails and now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It invokes shame. That's a place you never want to put your prospects.
Yeah, so. And you know why? Like, you never want to do that? It's funny because nobody ever talks about this part in the first place. And I never quite get it through my head why. Any cold email, any cold call, any cold outreach in general is always for the greater good of starting a conversation. And so if you do invoke shame, don't expect your sales cycle that follows behind it to be that successful, because people are people and they will remember those types of things. What's Maya Angelou, like her famous quote, she said, nobody remembers what you said or did, but they will always remember how you made them feel.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and a sales 100%. Cycle is just that, right? Like it's all a culmination of feelings built together. Do I trust these guys? Will I want to do business with them? You know, will this product work for me? You know, like all of those doubts, if you start on a shame spiral, like it'll never go well.
Well, Eric, I have a question, and this is maybe a little random, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on Facebook as an outreach channel. Have you?
Great question. Yeah, great question. All right. So as far as huge list building and things like that, Facebook is not integrated with as many tools. So the like scalability on it is not as crazy for building lists. Although I tell everybody, the cheapest form of like quote unquote intent data, and we could even talk about how a lot of it out there is kind of garbage, and intent data is just so tough to really use. But this cheapest form of quote unquote intent data, which I got to make another disclaimer. If anybody is listening, I know this isn't actually intent data, but it's it does help a little bit. Is if somebody joins a group. If somebody has joined some kind of Facebook group, they are interested in that thing, whatever it might be. They are interested in whatever it is. I think the largest Facebook group in the world is like the Instapot recipes group, which is funny. I don't know how they did that. But there are tons of Facebook groups out there of people who just want to learn more, and you could be involved in the community. And I think, so from a community perspective, I think it's awesome. What I'll do is, I mean, I do this everywhere I go, is I'll just drop free lists into groups all the time and just give them away. And like I'm in Jason Calacanis's Founder University right now, and I did it purely for networking. They're all building tech products right now, and I'm just like the marketer coming in like, oh, I think you could use this as a flywheel for yourself. And it's just a great networking opportunity. But every Zoom call I come in and I'm like, hey, I scraped the top 10 lists, the top 10 products of every day of 2021 and their founders and their email address. Who wants it? And then like everyone's like typing really fast. And so then the same thing goes for Facebook groups. That is so, so awesome to just drop that kind of stuff in there. Or people might have questions that you can come in and organically come in as an authority that like, yes, you could sell them something one day, but like also if you just solve their problem right now, the amount of people who are ridiculously thankful is awesome. So I'm very pro Facebook groups. Now, Facebook DMs, I'm still pro that, 100%. Facebook has a better spam filter. I would actually call it probably like a 10 times better spam filter than LinkedIn does.
Yeah.
And so the scalability of it is a lot less. You can't do as much. I've played around with a lot of the technical side of it. It's just their known proxy network is pretty large. So you need to use very good proxies if you're going to be using multiple accounts and different things. But if you, it's same thing as it goes for LinkedIn. If you hit somebody with a canned message, you're going to get a 1 or 2% reply rate, which for some people, that's perfectly fine. But if you put a little bit of care into the message, it's a great outreach channel as well. I mean, everyone's got a Facebook account. I think the Connect and Sell guys, when I was talking with them, they said something that I was like, you know, you're so right. And they were talking about how important it is to have a multi-channel outreach, because they just said, like, there are people who are going to pick up the phone and there are people who will never pick up the phone. Like, I am a person who I will not pick up the phone. If you leave me a voicemail, I'll listen to it and then I'll determine if I should call you back. But actually, I would respect more if somebody called me and left a voicemail. So maybe I would react to the phone, but I'm not going to pick it up just off the first one. You're going to have to leave me a voicemail, which now a lot of people aren't leaving voicemails so they can call over and over and over again to get you on the phone, which is a whole other strategy in itself. Like ZoomInfo does that. You ever sign up for their stuff and they'll call you from four different numbers across multiple times in the day. I actually just let them keep going because I just wanted to see how long the cycle was going to be. And I knew it was them because that
sequence
was the only
testing.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to see what their flow looked like. And it was like 2 days, every 2 days, four calls from four different numbers at like 10 to four and six that they were like spreading things across. But anyway, so the Connect and Sell guys, they were like, yeah, there's people who are going to pick up the phone. There are people who are going to answer email. There are people who are going to answer LinkedIn DMs. And you have to have this multi-channel outreach because the person who never answers a email, they might answer a LinkedIn DM or they might check their Twitter DMs, you know, like, and so that's why hitting people from all sorts of angles, which is another thing that I talk about too, is I usually talk about with my clients, like, let's build this list of 100 dream accounts that you want to get into, because there's so much more work that needs to go into them to break that account. And then let's also build this list of like, all right, I also have 20,000 other real estate agents that we're just going to blanket and we'll keep that over there to fill up your funnel. But these are like the top 100 that you're going to focus on. And so, yeah, like I said, very pro Facebook group, especially when you have this opportunity to answer these questions. There's actually a software that I helped build called Carly.ai that if you install it into a Facebook group, you can have it listen for keywords. So if anybody ever says like, does anyone know anything about email deliverability? I could get pinged and just jump straight into that. So yeah, very pro that. On the DMs, I don't do it so much, but I know it's a channel that absolutely would work, especially if your audience is very much on Facebook.
It's so funny. Back to the phone, you know, one of the things that we had Chris Bell, the CEO of Connect and Sell, a few episodes back.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah.
Fantastic. Listen, I mean, we went for over an hour. It was an insane. Great conversation. But what's funny about the phone is most people don't even appreciate this. The phone's the only synchronous outreach medium, really, when you get right down to it.
Yep.
And so it is a very binary event, pick up, not pick up. So the more attempts you get, the better off you are, probabilistically speaking, or just pure math, right? Like, and it's funny, even thinking this through is a little bit of an arcane science, right? Because you have to take the negative of a pickup rate. So like if you had a 3% call connect rate, you'd multiply 97% over and over and over again to get your probability increase depending on number of attempts. It's fascinating to me to study these kinds of things because these are the outbound tools of choice. They can be summarized in a pithy way of saying, well, some people never pick up the phone. But what I find even more true is like all of it breaks back to probability. Doesn't
that's it? Exactly, 100%. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And that's even what like Aaron Ross talks about in his book, Predictable Revenue, right? Is that like we're all just coming down to probability. And that's what's the awesome part about outbound is, okay, so I sent 500 emails and I got 15% of those people to say, yes, they wanted my ebook. Okay, great. Now there's an SMTP warming right now and I am scraping tons of data off of LinkedIn and people are going to get this. And instead of sending 500 emails, now I'm going to send 5,000 because I know exactly what I need to do in order to fill a WhatsApp group that only has 250 people in it. And that's why I love outbound so much because I could just do the backwards math once I figure it out. Facebook ads, Google ads, like one day you just might just get like obliterated and you have no clue what just happened. And at least with this stuff, like predictable revenue, I could just do the math coming back.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I always tell like SDRs that I work with or SDR teams that I work with, you know, there's a couple different ways to measure personal metrics as an SDR, and that is total number of calls to conversion and then total number of connected calls to conversion. Both of those data points tell you something completely different.
Absolutely.
They're both really important. So I think that's an example, but do you have anything like, you know, if you were talking to an SDR manager, you know, what kinds of advice would you have for them on how to scale their team? How do you know, any best practices or
things? Yeah, I would say embrace technology because once you embrace the technology, right? I truly don't think that the SDR role as the way it is today is going to maintain the same way for maybe 2 years, maybe even 1 year. And what I mean by that is that I think you could get so automated that so I can cram a ton of data into an email to make it look like I actually looked up your company. Now, an SDR never has to touch that. An SDR doesn't have to write that email. They don't have to do any research. I just did all of it. And I do it at the scale of like 10,000 at a time. So, okay, so that's check one. Email's done. Now, once you figure out that data for email, you can throw it into your LinkedIn automation if you use LinkedIn automation. And now LinkedIn is done. Check. Okay, so now you're done. Now, then you have like kind of the social side and you have the email and then there's the cold calling, right? And so I think SDRs will still be doing cold calls because, of course, there's people who are going to be picking up the phone. But I think that SDRs are going to have to become more like marketers. And like before we started recording, the reason I was talking about I'm experimenting with TikTok is because I think the ability to get a short 7-second video and provide value to somebody at scale is really, really a important skill to learn. And I think more SDRs are going to have to learn, okay, how do I post something on LinkedIn that garners people's attention? And then I can actually turn that into leads for my business. How do I post something on YouTube that garners people's attention? And then I can actually garner people's business from this, which is so interesting because like what a lot of people don't realize is that like SDRs at companies don't do this stuff for long because you get so successful at it, you just leave. Like that, like now you can make enough money for yourself that why even work for a company after you figured out some of these things? And so, but I do think that that's what SDRs are going to have to go to as the technology gets so good, unless we start switching emails for like airdrops on NFT wallets. And now you have no clue what somebody's contact information is going to be. Because that's the other thing too. People will be like, how'd you guess my email? And it's literally just John at their website. And I'm like,
yeah,
really? Like,
pretty easy.
Yeah. So that's what I would tell SDR leaders. That's what I do tell SDR leaders is like, embrace the technology as much as possible. It goes such a long way. Like I'm testing right now, sending 15-second videos on LinkedIn natively, like not Vidyard, not Loom, natively on the platform. And then what I'm doing is I'm saving, just in case, because I don't know where this is going to go, I'm saving every name in an Airtable so that one day, if the same name pops up, I don't have to repeat myself and I can just send the same video. Maybe I'll be able to get that far. Who knows? But I'm doing it in 15 seconds and I'm just saying like, hey, you know, this is me. And I'm not doing it for my computer with my camera. I'm doing it outside with a selfie video, like, and making purposely a crappy video and saying like, hey, I just saw that we got connected. Or my favorite thing to do is to scrape when we got connected. Oh, it's so great. Because if you can connect with 1,000 people per week on LinkedIn, right? Like you've got this log of all these people that you haven't reached out to yet. And so what I'll do is I'll scrape back the exact date that we connected. And so then in my message, I'll put that into the copy and I'll say, hey, I noticed that we got connected on February 1st and I still haven't reached out yet. I made this video for you. And then on the video, I'm saying, you know, hey, first name, there's so much spam on LinkedIn. I just wanted to cut to the chase and prove that I'm real. What I do is I help companies build their outbound motion. Not sure if this is something that you guys need, but I would love to learn about your whole marketing process in general. And I am getting, so I've only had the time to send like 40, but I've gotten like, I think 12 people have responded to me, which from just like a small growth case, that's freaking awesome, awesome numbers.
Yeah.
And so this is still coming back to the point that if you embrace this technology, if you're checking off all these boxes that an SDR usually has to do, send emails, research prospects, try to, you know, break into accounts, like all these things that can be done automatically. Now we have this time to do things that don't scale, but really stand out to your prospects, like personalized video messages that, you know, you're saying their name and you might have thrown something else in there. Video messages, engaging with their content on LinkedIn. That's one of my friends, Jesse Ouellette, he calls this the boomer method, and it works so well. And I just, it actually works ridiculously well. So LinkedIn has, and that's why I wrote a book, Sales Nav Secrets, because LinkedIn has such great targeting that like you can't get some of this targeting anywhere else. Some of the things that they'll let you know. And some people don't even realize some of the best things, like quickly, if you are in Facebook and you're not a member of a Facebook group, you can't see who's in that group. But through Sales Navigator, you can see every person in there. And like I said, cheapest, lowest form of intent data, but at least you know that they're interested in something. And the thing about LinkedIn groups is LinkedIn groups suck so much. Their engagement is so terrible that they actually typed in and they actually typed, I want to be in a SaaS marketing group, because otherwise they would have never found out about it. That's how bad it is with the boomer method. And you got to try it because it works so ridiculously well. Make a list of your accounts. I have a SalesNav advanced account, so I'm able to upload accounts through CSVs. So I'll do Sales Navigator searching like that. So it's filter by account, filter by the titles and all of the other personas you want. But then there's a little one in Spotlights called filter by people who have posted in the last 30 days. There are people in Fortune 1000 companies. There are people in tons of companies that they are trying super hard on LinkedIn and they're getting absolutely nowhere. And they have absolutely no traction.
Yeah.
So what you do is now, and there's tools that you can scrape and get all this information. Namely, I'm going to say Texao, because I'm a big fan of Vikesh and the work that they're doing over there. So you could use Texao, T-E-X-A-U, to create that search. And then you pull all the information out of that search. Now you have all of these people's profiles. And then you could take it a step further and you could even scrape their past activity out of those profiles so you could see it in front of you on a spreadsheet, who's posting consistently and getting 2 likes on every post.
Yeah.
You could take it that far, but now you're starting to do so much scraping, you might put your cookie at risk. So I don't take it that far, but I just use those to then just be able to really quickly just see these people's profiles. And so then, like I said, there are people who are posting consistently and they'll get 2 likes and they're getting absolutely nowhere on LinkedIn. And so all you do is you just come in there and you just like their post, comment. I keep track of it. I might do that like twice and then I'll share the post to them and I'll say like, hey, you know, I really like this one. This one was insightful. Or if too much time has passed, I might not even do it twice. I might just do it once and then just say like, oh, hey, me and my buddy were just talking about this post and I just wanted to share it with you. And then you could kind of use that to get in to them as well. And you know, it's so funny. People are so appreciative. Or even, we've even tried automating, dropping a comment on some of these posts, which then they were changing their cookie around so much that we were like, we don't want to do this. Or their anti-scraping technology they were changing. So we were kind of getting off of it. But we were just tagging each other, like our friends, and just saying like, oh, hey, Jesse, you should see this. And then that person would be like, oh, wow, they just gave me engagement. Like, this is great. And it's just not something that like people even know that can be automated. Right. And so then they're like, oh, they're actually coming in and doing this. And so then we'll comment, we'll say insightful things. I think one time I was trying to break into an account while I was working at the incubator. It was like an account for, they sold like ag tech and we're trying to get into a big farming conglomerate. And one person, they posted every day on LinkedIn and I couldn't believe that they did. But they were posting like it was Facebook. So they would say like crazy stuff. And one of the things that they said one day was, they were like, country music isn't the same anymore. Like, these kids have completely ruined country music. And I was like, I really don't know why you're posting this on LinkedIn. Yeah. But anyway, I commented on it and I said, yeah, you're right. Florida Georgia Line sucks. And so then, which I actually love Florida Georgia Line. And then I DM'd it to them and I was like, oh my gosh, couldn't agree more with you. Like I'm even 25 and I think Florida Georgia Line is terrible. And then they're like, oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. And I was just like, hey, and then you just get into it with them. You're just like, oh, hey, yeah, no, like, by the way, are you guys like having this kind of issue or whatever it might be? And so we got the meeting with them, but it's just like, and so like I say, like when you embrace the technology, you check off this box, you check off this box, you check off this box. You have the time in your day now to think, okay, what can we do to actually make an impact on customers, right? And so that's what I always tell SDR leaders is just like, let's just, especially cold email. It is so easy to automate cold email and do it well. Like, let's just ramp it up. Let's get you in there. Let's start reaching out to people who have your pain. We can front it with a lot of good relevant information. Let's end it with some AI. And then they think that you actually sent them an email and you know, let's go. And so, I guess that's what I would say for SDR leaders, you know, after a 10-minute rant, I think.
You know, your rant hits home though, because, and what's even funnier, especially the parts on LinkedIn where you're, you know, jumping into supporting or engaging or otherwise liking or commenting on those posts, it all breaks back to Dale Carnegie, right? Like interested is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. And I think that's like, the main problem with a lot of outbound is it's like, it's just so easy to tell that you didn't write this message. Like there's like this BS beater that goes off in everybody's head. Mm-hmm. And like, you just know that it, and so like, basically you're just leaving everything up to timing when you, a lot of these people are automating. And so like you might, I think somebody one time they automated a message to me that said like, hey, do you need help building a website? And I was like, oh yeah, like Stripe is ridiculous. So like, I said in the beginning, I don't have a website because I just acquire clients through my network right now. And I'm deciding on what I necessarily would want to do. But I have a company that I work with that I see a huge future in. And so I think I might, I'm going to be sitting tight. But so anyway, if anybody needs my help that I'm going to charge them for, that's the only reason I have the company. But now Stripe was like, you need a website. Otherwise, we're not going to pay out any of your information. And then they messaged me about the website. And I was like, this is a terrible message. I do need this right now. But this is a terrible message and I'm not going to respond to you.
Oh, man. Well, what would you say? And I know this is kind of another question about advice, but what would you say to an SDR who feels a little bootstrapped by, you know, what they're being funneled? So whether it's by marketing or by their leaders, you know, SDRs who maybe feel like they don't have as much control over the messaging, like what would you say are some ways around that? Like I'll give you a quick example. Someone came into my DMs a few weeks ago with a terrible message on LinkedIn. And so I offered to give a little bit of feedback. I was like, hey, yes. And he said, I don't care about feedback because marketing writes all my content. And I was like, okay, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I've been hearing about that. So I've never worked in I've worked with venture-backed companies, but I've never been on the inside or at a Fortune 1000 company. I've always just been like on the outside or like a consultant. And so some of the things that these companies do that I'm just like, wow, that is crazy. Cause I feel like marketers will write messages that you could just tell is marketing. Like, and you like
marketees.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, so this, I didn't even know that that was happening until maybe 6 months ago, that there were sales activities being written by marketing that sales had no control over. And I was like, wow, that's just such a strange thought to me. But, so for the person that feels a little strapped by it, I would say for them to embrace the technology as well and get all of the check boxes that you need for your manager to be happy with what you just did today, and then focus on the things that you could be scaling yourself, like learn how to create engaging content on LinkedIn. A big thing, like I said, I was big on Facebook groups, I'm big on Slack channels, I'm big on WhatsApp groups too, because like on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all of these top social things, or maybe we'll call it light social. I know Chris Walker calls it dark social. I'm not sure if he really gets credit for that. And possibly he does. I'm nothing against Chris Walker. But these dark social groups that he talks about, instead of trying to compete with like LinkedIn and their algorithm, figuring out like, oh, are polls hot today? I don't know. Like what's going to happen? If you join these communities, you're only competing with the 1,000 other people who are in the community, 990 of them who aren't even posting at all, and 990 of them who are still reading all of the messages that go into that community. And so then, like I said, like if they're manually forcing you to write LinkedIn messages, which is that happening at some of these companies? Like, I don't even know.
I don't know. I imagine.
Oh, okay. So yeah. I would imagine.
I think a lot of companies leave the SDRs to their own devices. So yeah, I think that's absolutely happening.
Oh, all right. So there, I would grab like an AppSumo deal for like a LinkedIn automator and just like check off if that's what they want you to do. If they want you to copy and paste messaging, if that's really like as low as they want you to get on this stuff, check off those boxes, get it done. You can also hire like, I'm huge on this. I think, and maybe this gets like a little bit more philosophical outside of outbound, I think all of us should be attempting to build as much leverage with our lives as possible. Mm. And we're going to take a step out of outbound a little bit, that like, so if you, and I'm just going to pick on working at Target again, because, and nothing against working on Target, it's a starting place for a lot of people, or it just works for people. If you're working at Target, like you have no leverage, you have to show up and you have to do the work, and you really have no, you can't augment what you're doing. Like, and even if you do, like if you clean up the aisles faster, like I'm not sure if you really get like that much more of a benefit for how much harder you're working. And so then like I talk to SDRs all the time too, that I'm like, look, you could hire virtual assistants for $6 to $10 an hour, who, by the way, love that. Like in their country, they are crushing it with that money. They love that, and they will work so hard for you. They can, if you can only send 30 messages a day on LinkedIn, they'll knock that out in an hour. So for like $6 to $10 a day, you can get that stuff knocked out. And the reason why I say it's kind of like more philosophical is like we need to be stepping away and building leverage for ourselves. And if you are stuck writing messages all day and you have no access to automation or you have no access like above getting an API or doing it like that, you need to focus on the way that you can build leverage for yourself, because you're your own brand, you're your own business, you're your own revenue generating machine. And you need to think of yourself like that. How do you build leverage with your time? How do you build leverage with your software in order to get yourself to whatever your next goal is or your final goal may be? Mm-hmm. And so for those SDRs that feel a little bit trapped by that, there's some things that you could switch companies that will allow you to have better access to things, which I know isn't the easiest thing to do all the time, or you can fly below the radar on some things and you could focus on those activities that once you get that wiped off, if your company isn't taking care of it for you, but once you get them checked off, you could focus on that really awesome outreach, that really awesome video, staying in communities, adding value to communities, learning a skill that's going to make you even more valuable and adding leverage to your life. And like I said, I take that step back because I believe in it so heavily. We all need to be adding that leverage to our life to be able to control our surroundings.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good advice. Thank you for that. I think any SDR listening is gonna take a lot of value away from this conversation.
Yeah, and I hope so. Because the other thing too is like, so people will bring me in to do essentially the activity of what they're used to like 10 SDRs doing.
Yeah.
And I just think that like, oh man, like SDRs are getting like just punched in the face every day. And there's people who are talking about this, like Jared Robin and Tom Slocum over at RevGenius. They're talking about this, that like account executives, if they have product market fit, sometimes like you're getting on a call and they're doing this deal. But if you guys have product market fit and you're actually solving a problem, some of these account executives are just cleaning it up with commission. And then the SDRs kind of get left out in the cold just because this is like an entry level position, yeah, they call it. But man, they're just getting like punched in the teeth so much. And like, and even being denied access to tools that are like $9 a month. And like, I was talking to somebody about like, oh, you know, like Apollo could totally do this for you. And they're like, yeah, but they don't want to get it. I'm like, yeah, but it's $9 a month. Like, yeah. What do you mean they don't want to get it? So yeah, I think the SDR role, like I said, they get punched in the face every day. And hopefully one day maybe there'll be this shift where account executives who are just order fulfillment takers, like, because there are some who just answer a couple questions and then you just pull a lever and then you're just done. Maybe in those kind of companies, the commission might switch over or something like that. And I don't know how much that'll affect the whole like structure of the company, because it is kind of just so meant for this assembly line of SDR to account executive to customer success. But yeah, I definitely feel for them. And I teach SDRs as much as I possibly can about this kind of stuff so that they can do their jobs so much more effectively.
Yeah.
Because the technology will just let you literally 10x what you're doing. And now, like I said, and I'm big on this, now you can focus on the things that don't scale after you've checked off all the boxes of things that do. And a lot of the times those things work better than the things that scale. And so, yeah.
It's almost axiomatic that way. The things that don't scale. You know, it's funny too, though, in my experience, especially with SDRs and working with, I don't know, a few hundred here at Science, SDRs usually go through a progression path where they have to figure out their own formulas. Once you start to figure out those formulas, and I say this, and I don't know why, like, but I always seem to get that like deer in the headlights look when I say it. It literally is like turning on a light bulb, where once you figure out how to like get an appointment, how to get somebody across the line, how to get them interested in opening up a conversation, it's literally like you just taught that person to fish forever.
Yeah.
Rather than just handed them a fish. It is one of those leverageable skills that you need never go hungry again once you've figured that piece of it out.
Yeah, exactly. And I was actually just talking with a marketer that him and I are going to partner up on some stuff. And he was talking about how his co-founder is kind of like exiting their business. But he was also like, oh, like I need a little bit of revenue from the business still, because it was paying for my mortgage and everything. And I was like, well, it's a good thing he's exiting. And I told the guy who we're going to be partnering up with. And I was like, because us as marketers and salespeople, if you need more money, just go get more money. Like, yeah. Isn't that what our job is to be able to do? And he's like, yeah, that's why it's not working out. And so I agree. Like once, and so that's another thing of why, like, I think that sometimes sales is so ineffective is because the best people don't work for single companies. Like the best people go out and do it for themselves. Like I'll have people come in and I just only teach them about email deliverability, or I only teach them about how to warm up emails. And they're like, God, how much could, like, what would it take to hire you? And I'm like, all right, like this is what I'm doing right now. And they're like, ah, yeah, okay. And so the best people just don't stay in the organizations. And because they realize once they can fish, they don't need a 9-to-5 job. They'll just go out and just do it on their own. I know plenty of people, highly, highly successful salespeople who are commission only salespeople. They don't have a salary, but they have like 3 accounts that they just wake up for, and they just wake up, they take care of these accounts, and then they just make money. And then they could take days off if they want. They block their calendars, and that's just all they do. So yeah, they can absolutely just keep fishing.
I love that. Speaking of fishing, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about one of the secrets that you dropped on us, but like have not revealed, if you will, and if you deign it so important. How are you getting past the LinkedIn connection request limits?
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know how much longer this will be out, because once people figure this stuff out,
LinkedIn will beat them back.
Yeah, LinkedIn beats you back. And so the way that you do it is, and I have a Loom video on this. So if anybody who's listening, you can just reach out to me on LinkedIn and I'll send you the full Loom video. If you are on your LinkedIn page, do this. You have to do it on the web. You can't do it on your mobile phone. If you're on the page, hit My Network, and then a new page is going to pop up. Hit My Connections. When My Connections pops up, you're going to have the full list of people in front of you. Then on the right, it's going to have something that says something around connect with your contacts or add your contacts on the right. And there's going to be this box and it might have your email address already in it. Don't use that though. Then you're going to hit more options that's underneath it. You could tell how many times I've done this. You're going to hit more options that's underneath it. And then they're going to say, okay, we want to connect with your email address to see who your contacts are, and then we'll find them on LinkedIn, right? And so LinkedIn is going to make that sync with your email address, your work one or your personal one. It doesn't matter. You just enter it in and it'll see all of the people's email addresses that you have in your contact book. And it will go out, and if it matches a email address with a LinkedIn profile, you'll go to the next page and it'll say like, all right, we found 850 people. It's up to 1,000, but it just depends on what it finds in your address book. Then there's going to be a lot of boxes, and they only have an unselect all button. They don't have a select all button, because of course they want you to be able to spam everybody else, but not on their network. So you have to click through all these people, or I'll send you 10 lines of code that you could put into your console and it'll just click everybody for you. So you don't have to sit there clicking all of those people. And so you just put that into your console exactly the way that I send it to you, just hit enter, and it'll just literally just click everybody. For some reason, then it says to like connect all or something like that, or it'll say to send invites. For some reason, if you click that button, nothing happens. So just hit skip, because that's the only thing that you really can do. Then they're going to ask you to spam your network that you have the email address of, but they didn't find LinkedIn profiles for, which is understandable. They're trying to run their business too. Then you could skip that and hit done. And then you'll come up to a page confirming that you just sent out 850 connection requests. And you'll see anywhere between like a 30 to a 50%, as long as you're connecting with people who are like in your industry, that kind of makes sense. You see like 30 to 50%, or at worst, I've seen like 10 to 15. Now, the way that you augment this is if you have access to data tools that can get personal email addresses of the people, that's how you can augment this process. And so the best tools for the money would be SalesQL and LeadHype. So both of those tools, SalesQL needs your LinkedIn cookie, LeadHype doesn't, which LeadHype is, it's a crazy, crazy tool, because they don't need your cookie. They're definitely doing some shifty stuff on the back end, but I'm cool with it. I'm not going to get blamed. So then those two will get you the personal email addresses. The reason why you want a personal email address is because people sign up for LinkedIn with their personal email address. They don't usually connect to their company one. And so once you have that personal email address, then all you do is import that into your contact book. And then if you're using something that's not Google, like I know Hotmail can only import like 100 people per day or something like that. If you're not using Google, just open up a Google account. You can connect as many email addresses as you want to your LinkedIn profile. So then just connect that new Google account to your LinkedIn profile. There's absolutely no reputation damage that I've ever found of doing that. And then And then you just upload that list, have LinkedIn look back into it. And that's how you could get 1,000 people per week, connection requests sent, and you could beat their limits. And so there's plenty of tools.
And so real quick, the essence of this is basically that you're taking your lead list augmented with personal emails into your own address book and then letting LinkedIn find that.
Yeah.
In like connections you would know, so to speak, and then do the send on your behalf. And I'm guessing too that each one of those connection requests would be a null set. So this person wants to connect with you, no message, no nothing.
Just, no message. Yeah, which is actually my preference. I think that's far, far better. Me personally, I've seen the rates change. Like when you send a message saying like, hey, I'd like to get connected, that doesn't have as much of a positive acceptance as no message. But also, even when I see somebody connecting with me, and I'm a person who like, I want as many LinkedIn connections as possible. If you're going to spam me, it's worth it to get that next number. Like, I don't care. But recently there's been so much spam that I'm like, nope, I don't even want it. Like if you have words in your connection request, I think you're just going to pitch slap me and I don't want anything to do with it. And so I'll deny those people. So it just sends blank connection requests. Yeah.
Our data indicates the exact same phenomenon.
Oh, yes. Okay.
That's why I use the word the null set, because you're just sending out a message. And then what you're really doing, actually, if you break it down into further details, you're forcing the recipient, like, what's their behavior when they get a connection request? Oh, they got to go back to the profile page to look at the person who wants to connect with them. So in a sense, like that's happening in like at least an 80-20 rule, maybe higher, of does this person look like somebody that I would want in my network? And do I do that little mental calculus in 3 seconds or less by just looking at that profile? So I would even say this, like for the people that want the higher connection rate, the first step is actually optimizing your own LinkedIn profile.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, 100%. Like the amount of times I see... Oh, yeah. What's up, Caroline?
So many people overlook the basics, like a photo, a bio. There really are some incredibly basic things you can do to bolster your profile that people overlook. And then, of course, you know, consistently engaging with other people's posts, making sure that you follow people that you actually want to engage with. And yeah, a lot of people forget the basics there, I think.
Oh yeah, 100%. And so like even one of the basics you didn't mention was like your headline. If your headline is just like customer support specialist, then I'm like, all right. Like, and so that's why I changed mine to using outbound to create inbound, because if people actually look at my profile, I'll have a lot of people be like, hey, what do you mean by that? And so like, and then also now, and that's the other thing that like, when you leave so much up to automation, you lose out on a ton, right? Yeah. Because anybody who asks me, what does outbound to create inbound equal, you will get a response from me every single time. Like I will tell you. But when you're automating, like you're not going to see that stuff, you know? And so, but an SDR could easily figure that out about me. But since there's so much automation, and so that's maybe the knock I'll put against automation, is sometimes there's blatantly obvious ways to break into an account that you miss because you're automating too much. And so I will knock against automation for that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how I... I was going to say, you want to know how I secretly, sneakily figured out how many people are automating messages to me in particular?
You put an emoji in your name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then it's just blatant. Like it's just
obvious.
Yeah. It's like, all right, boom, gotcha. You know,
and then you've got the exact same thing on your profile, Eric.
Yeah. I've got like a mechanical arm to kind of be like a mechanical robot sales borg. And so yeah, that's why I did it too. And people will ask me, they're like, oh, like what's up with the emoji? Then the other thing too is that screws up a lot of LinkedIn scrapers when you email people too. I've seen that as well. Because people are scraping this stuff straight out of LinkedIn. And then this is also like a dirty known secret. I hate it when I see a database company charging like 35 cents a record and they're not ZoomInfo, they're just some database company. They're just making money off of people who don't know. There's plenty of tools that all they're doing is just taking your first name, your last name, and then your web domain, and then just validating every single permutation of that email, and it costs like 2 cents to do it. And there's people who I know that are paying 35 cents a record. And I'm like, that is, stop doing that. Like, even if you don't work with me, stop doing that. There's other places to go get the email data. And so that's screwing up some of that too, because people are getting it straight from LinkedIn. And now you've got this like emoji in their name. I have a Google Sheet script that fixes all of that. So like, I don't need to worry about it, but I will see it sometimes come through.
Yeah.
It's so funny. And I can tell that looking at your LinkedIn profile, you're also a big believer in this. You know, most people like play LinkedIn straight down the middle, which is to say, hey, LinkedIn, it's a monopoly for professional identity because there is no substitute in the world today. And most people go and they put up their online resume and job sequential order, and then they put their title, whatever it is they're called, and no bio, and basically just, again, play it right down the middle. Whereas when you're using LinkedIn for outbound, it seems to me that the real win is in, if I thought about this page, not so much as my professional identity, but rather a landing page.
Yep, yep.
Where I could get anyone to think anything about me, my brand, my solutions, my company, whatever messages I really wanted to get, like, kind of without the guard up, like without people going, you know, like, oh, I'm on a vendor's website. What do I think I'm going to see? Like nothing but very favorable features and benefits about them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Whereas on a LinkedIn page, it's the exact opposite. Oh, I expect I'm going to see a, you know, a profile. Oh, wait a minute. Inbound through outbound? You know, like,
yeah.
Now I'm getting all these messages. What does it mean when somebody says attention as a service? Oh, okay. I'm looking at Eric's profile, and all of a sudden these ideas are just hitting like my, you know, the middle of my brain without any filter up.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I love the way that you said landing page too, because like you do want to optimize the whole thing for conversion. Like it's not just like this gobbledygook. And so like another thing that I tried doing is changing the pronoun section. Like you could use it for like he, him, she, her, and all of those things. And I just changed it to see featured section. And once I did that, I was checking for it. Once I did that, I had a way bigger click-through of my profile from just organic posts of people that were looking for what my see featured section is, which now my book, Sales Nav Secrets, is in there. And if outbound beats organic, which I know outbound will because I can control the math on outbound and I can't on organic, but organic is still a channel you need to tackle.
That's a really deep insight that hopefully anyone that's trying to leverage LinkedIn will be paying attention to.
Yeah, just it's super easy. And if you're ever worried about any like flashback, because people are like, this is meant for pronouns, it's never happened to me. And I don't think anybody has a problem with it at all. But yeah, it's just the pronoun section. Just put see featured section in there. You don't need to put parentheses. I, you know, it's so funny. All the things that I remember about LinkedIn without looking at LinkedIn, because I look at LinkedIn all day. I'm like, wow, like I could just tell you everything about their UI. Yeah, you don't need to put parentheses. They'll put it for you. Just put see featured section. I even made my cover photo have arrows pointing down to see featured section, so that, because really just trying to drive people to exactly what I'm talking about.
These are
effective
some
landing page
insane hacks for LinkedIn. I feel like I just learned.
We didn't even talk about how to steal your competitors' customers, and then I do have to go. But this is like nobody does this, and so like you could steal your competitors' customers so easily on LinkedIn because they have this little tidbit where you can see people on Sales Navigator and in LinkedIn Basic, you can search by people that you're connected with. And so what I suggest to people is like, go connect with your competitors' reps, connect with their SDRs, and you can see their first degree connections, so the people that you share directly, the second degree connections, so the people that you share that's one away, and then the third degree connections as well. So that gets a pretty wide net. So you're not going to see everybody, but you're going to get a pretty good list. And then you could use the same filters that you use on Sales Navigator to still filter down this list. And then what I've done in the past that I've built for teams, I don't do it right now, but I've built this for teams, is that weekly we were scraping that list. So we would see all of the new profiles that they were connecting with. And so if they were opening up a conversation, we could step right into that conversation. But then that would be a video so that we'd be able to step in with a stronger messaging because we know that they've already been opened up by another account, they've been targeted by another account, or they've been targeted by another vendor. So we just wanted to put our absolute best foot forward on that one. But that's one of my favorite LinkedIn hacks, that it's just totally open to anybody and nobody, I don't see anybody talking about that.
That is a mic drop moment.
when you look at this all day, like my girlfriend was just telling me, she's like, hey, I think she was joking with me. She was like, oh, I think somebody just called you a fraud on your LinkedIn profile. And I was like, that's not even close to being true because I have LinkedIn open all day long. And I would know like if somebody even said, like, it's literally just open. It's open right now. Like yeah. It is always open all day. I have three monitors for a reason. It's always open. And she's like, oh, dang it. I thought I could get you. I was like, no, I watch it very closely.
That's awesome. Well, this is the part of the show where we're closing it up. So how should people engage with you to get more of these goodies, more of the goodness, get their own Trojan horse, right? Like,
yeah. So you can follow me on LinkedIn and connect with me on LinkedIn. My name is my own password, which it's not actually, don't even try that. But if you just put in Eric Noslowski, you won't find anybody else. So it's very unique. So you can just put in Eric Noslowski on LinkedIn. And then I always tell people, like, you could absolutely text me. My phone number is 551-482-2855. And you just text me. I have, like, from the last podcast I did with Predictable Revenue, I have, like, some Penn State students texting me about why I do marketing and stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. So LinkedIn and texting me, like I said, 551-482-2855. And then my email is just eric@growthenginex if you really want to email me as well. But those are the best ones. Yeah.
I love that. You're going to get roped into a senior thesis.
Which I would, you know, I would love to go back to college and just be like, look, because I took intro to business classes and I'm like, you're all wrong. This isn't the way you're going to do it. It's all about marketing. Don't worry about, like, who cares about your operation? Like, it just all is about marketing. You'll figure out your operation later. And I have gone back. I actually, I've gone back to, I think, 4 schools and I've talked to them about marketing. And then I actually, like, quick little plug, I am the email deliverability expert for the U.S. Army, and I help them do all of their recruiting in New Jersey. And so we do tons of emails, for that, which is awesome because you don't need to worry about CAN spam rules because they are like, you can't block the military. Like, we could just keep going and, like, nobody, and I'm just like, this is great. Like, I don't have to worry about anything. So I do go back and do a lot of work with students still, absolutely, on the college level. And then I'm big on helping the U.S. Army. I have 2 brothers who are in the Army.
What a wonderful, wonderful episode. This has just been like one insight bomb after another. So I cannot
I appreciate
to get this
live. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.